In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
When it comes to policy and how to run a state, there is no better example for other states what not to do than Oregon. People who live here know this instinctively. I'm saying this for the benefit of people who live in other states who may be listening to our radio station's live streams or maybe to the podcast after the show airs on the radio. California often gets the attention when it comes to far-left things, but many times it's the states that don't get the attention that nobody's listening to or watching, like Oregon, and that's how far-left policies get passed into law. Big states like California attract big money to stop stupidity, sometimes, but not enough people pay attention to Oregon, which is why we've said in the past here on iSpy that Oregon is the Wuhan lab of leftist policies. They experiment on it here before they try it in another state, and that includes developing gain of function because once they've successfully passed it here, they know the right arguments to make to sway legislators and their Democrat base to supporting things that would make otherwise intelligent and normal people cringe. So this week's show is focused on Oregon. Well, almost entirely focused on Oregon, because there are some federal level policies that could impact things here in Oregon in a good way. Notice I say could, because there's also that saying, cut off your own nose to spite your face. That's Oregon's Democrats. They will cut off their own Oregonians to spite the federal government. Oregon needs help, but can't get any because they are perceived as a lost cause. And so there is an endless cycle of spiraling downward. And let me just say this. People who understand how to recognize value often start businesses. They recognize the need and create a service or a product to fill that need. People buy it because it has value to them. That's the American dream. That's the basis of the American success story. But for too many people on the left, if you can't think of something valuable, something that adds value, and take the risk to go create that, the next solution is to think of something destructive, a problem you can fix. And that's kind of been the approach to forestry by the environmental left. Harvesting timber from trees that grow back is valuable. But if your ideological and religious beliefs, because it's not science, it's religion, science would tell you that the trees grow back. If your ideological and religious beliefs stop you from pursuing value, meh, destroy the forest to create a problem that then needs to be fixed and get paid to do it. And once you get paid to fix destroyed forests, well, you've created a perpetual motion money machine that keeps on paying year after year after year. Here in Oregon, we have come to expect stupid. And once you expect stupid, you tolerate stupid. Well, it's time we stop that. So on today's show, we're focusing on Oregon because there is some bright news, as I said, and hope for Oregon. But then in the second half of the show, you'll start to question your sanity. We'll be talking with Representative Ed Diehl about that stupidity we've come to expect and too much of Oregon is willing to tolerate. It's been a while, but I would like to welcome back Dr. Bob Zybak. He earned his doctorate in environmental sciences from OSU and is a consultant for issues of forestry and timber and forest fires. Bob, it is great to talk to you. It's been a while.
Thanks, Mark. Yes, it has. Good to be with you again.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to have you back. So whenever we can, we'd like to start with some good news. And as long as you have been involved with the forest and timber industries, I would think that Trump's recent executive orders to open up and expand logging on federal lands, that has to be welcome news. And if so, how big of news is that?
Well, it could be monumental. This, I think, the best break we've had in the forestry and in the forest industry in Oregon since the Clinton plan. Mm. We had opportunities at that time, and we didn't take them. And we've dealt with 35 years of unemployment and dead wildlife and smoky skies and wildfires ever since. So this is a real opportunity. Hopefully it'll be successful.
So as you looked at those executive orders, what were some of the highlights for you that really stood out that says, okay, these people finally get it?
Well, two things. The one executive order says we need more timber, which more logging, which is absolutely true. We had our grandparents and great-grandparents show us how to do it. We didn't have wildfires. We had new schools and new parks. We had jobs for people with sophomore and high school educations. You didn't need a four-year studies degree to get a government job that taxpayers paid for. You went to work and worked up a sweat and paid taxes. So that opportunity is great. And then the export EO, we're importing, I think, more lumber from Canada than we're producing. And that's precisely what Coals to Newcastle means. Here in Oregon, we're letting our forests burn and rot and burn again. Mm-hmm. And we're killing people and homes and wildlife and domestic animals. And the smoke is estimated to kill 10,000 people a year annually in the United States, wildfire smoke. So the combination of reducing exports or imports, rather, from Canada and other places, and increasing our own harvest is a real opportunity to be successful again in the forest industry as we had been for generations.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, on the other side, we've got Oregon constantly trying to shut down its own state lands with the Habitat Conservation Plan and other such nonsense. What has been the reaction? I mean, I'm sure you must have heard something. What has been the reaction within Oregon's various governing boards that have oversight of Oregon's state forests and other lands to those executive orders? Do you get a sense, are they maybe open to it, or are they like maybe trying to plan and to sue and stop it?
We just had a statewide celebration of Abortion Day.
Yeah.
The politicians we have now see anything coming from Trump as something to oppose.
Mm-hmm.
And our state government is, and our state representatives in Congress have been a joke for too long. We need real people there with real Oregon roots. When we're told that Oregon values is birth control pills, like our governor said, that's like the mayor. It doesn't matter what they're saying at this point. They need to be replaced. They've just been a real embarrassment.
Yeah, I don't know how much they would be able to stop on federal lands. But of course, you know, when you're talking about forests, there's kind of overlap there, because something that happens on the federal lands doesn't stay there. It gets onto state lands and vice versa. The majority of catastrophic wildfires, which are 100,000 acres or more, if I remember the definition right, it seems like most of those of late have started on federal lands, which then, as I said, spread into state forests or private forests. If those executive orders can prevent catastrophic wildfires from getting onto state lands, I mean, isn't that good for everybody?
It's wonderful for everybody except the Democratic politicians that oppose it. Yep. Mm. It's a really good thing. And I've said it on your program before. From 52 to 87, we had one major fire in Oregon. It was above 10,000 acres, the 40,000 acre Oxbow burn in 1966. And then from then until we started putting in wilderness and roadless areas and had the 1987 Silver Complex, that was the only major fire. So my whole career in the woods as a reforestation contractor never involved any wildfire fighting at all. It involved a lot of prescribed burning. So, yeah, getting back to work and putting our active management of our public lands in order again would just be a wonderful step back in time and forward into the future both.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's go and take a break there. The National Wildfire Alliance has drafted a proposed executive order and sent it to President Trump for his review. How cool is that to be part of the solution? We'll take you behind the scenes of that up next with Dr. Bob Zybak. And welcome back. This is iSpy Radio Show. We're talking about some really great, fantastic hope for Oregon and its timber industries and forests. And we're doing that with Dr. Bob Zybak, whose academic focus was in catastrophic forest fires in Oregon. And that seems a rather appropriate dissertation topic, given that you are a member of the National Wildfire Alliance. And as I mentioned going on to that break, that you guys just sent a proposed executive order to President Trump, and that was about a month ago. But before we get there, you were at a recent meeting over in Sweet Home that included a Linn County United States Forest Service logger, and there's a group there that's trying to put, the USFS, they're trying to put the Willamette National Forest on the map as leading the way for those new executive orders that says, hey, we need to start harvesting this valuable asset that we have. If that happens, opening the Willamette National Forest logging, what's that going to look like?
Wonderful. A lot more log trucks on the roads. a lot more money in the rural communities, a lot greater recreational opportunities for the public, more safety for wildlife and for people, like it used to be in the 70s and 80s. It'll open up the woods to everybody, and it will be an economic boon for the local counties and towns and manufacturing businesses, forestry-related businesses. It was the lifeblood of Oregon for generations, and it can go back to being a very important part of our economy.
For the Willamette National Forest in particular, do you have a sense of how much could be harvested and what that would mean? For example, are there mills that have closed in the area that would possibly be reopening?
Well, the problem is they've been closed and dismantled. But yeah, we're focused on Oak Ridge. The last couple of articles I wrote was on Jim's Creek restoration, Savannah restoration, which is about 28 or 29,000 acres in size and could produce jobs for decades while reopening the landscape to real critical wildlife habitat, the old savannas that were there for thousands of years. And then Cedar Creek, that burned 130,000 acres, and there's a lot of old growth good solid second growth timber in there that should have been salvaged 2 years ago. But the combination of salvage and landscape restoration would create the type of income where they could rebuild those facilities. That's been the problem, is that those facilities have been dismantled, a lot of them 10 and 15 and 20 years ago. And so they would have to be rebuilt, and that would require investment. And after World War II, we had a similar situation, and the government wrote 20-year contracts so that people could afford to come in and invest the money to build the facilities and hire the people. And that produced hundreds of millions of dollars worth of jobs and products, and reduced the price of housing.
Yeah.
And no wildfire.
Yeah. What a concept. You harvest the debris and take care of the forests and actually manage them, and suddenly you have fewer catastrophic wildfires. So I'd like to get to this executive order that you guys have sent. You guys sent it in about a month ago, and I'd just like to read this from the cover letter. It says, billions in taxpayer dollars have fueled the destruction of trillions in public and private property, including 100 million forested acres and thousands of homes. These fires also damaged critical wildlife habitat and key watershed needed for clear water supplies. This devastation was predictable, documented, and largely prevented. And so, I mean, 100 million forested acres, Trump in introducing the National Energy Dominance Council, that was one of the things that they started talking about. And they also kind of lumped in some discussion there of all of these national public lands that we have, the federal lands that are being held, and they just sit there to a large extent. And what they're really trying to do is they're trying to move those out of the liability column, which we're it's costing the government money, and move that into an asset where we make money from that. 100 million forest acres, I mean, that's a tremendous amount of land that's just basically went to nothing when we could have been profiting a lot off of that.
It's worse than nothing. It's a deficit.
Yes.
It's a killing. It's a ruining product. It's a blocking off access. It's been a costly, mistaken direction. And we know how to manage the lands to profit for Washington, D.C., in Oregon, for Salem, for the local communities. We're focused on Oak Ridge and Willamette National Forest as an ideal starting point to demonstrate and to train people again how to do these jobs, both on the Forest Service level, all the jobs that were laid off in the 90s with Clinton, and on the practical level, the sawmill, tree planting, logging, road building jobs.
Yeah, it's not just harvesting the forest, as you point out. There's so many other jobs associated with that. And we'll make sure that we have this executive order, the draft of it, up on iSpyRadio.com. This week's show is 15-13. Just look down in the show notes, and there'll be a PDF of that. And one of the things that really got my attention was in section two here, you talk about reinstating the 10 a.m. rule. Yep. Why don't you talk to us about that? Because it seems like such common sense.
Well, it is common sense. After 1910 fires, the government put in over 8,000 lookout towers, all connected by pack trails and roads and telephone lines. And then at World War II, we added airplane surveillance and smoke jumpers. And from 52 to 87, we had one major fire. It was we were really effective. The environmentalists said, oh, we have all these fires now because of all that fire suppression. And I can't use the technical word for it because this is public radio, but it's nonsense. It's the euphemism. It's all been neglect. Passive management has been a failure. It was predicted to be a failure. But then that failure has been blamed on things like global warming or fire suppression, and that's not true. The 10 a.m. rule, some people will say, well, it needs to be modified, that some fires really do have an environmental benefit if they're allowed to go. But the difference between a prescribed fire in reality and a prescribed fire the way the Forest Service has been defining it to get away with this stuff is that a prescribed fire has a planned set ignition plan. And when you have an unplanned ignition, like a lightning strike or an arsonist or a campfire or a backfiring car, that's a wildfire.
Yeah.
It's not and a prescribed fire.
And it's really unfortunate that notion that fire is good for forests that really seemed to dominate a lot of the environmental left. But really, I think in practical purposes, it became the excuse not to do anything. Okay, everyone stay with us. We'll continue our discussion with Dr. Bob Zyback. He has an article recently that is specific to the United States Forest Service's mismanagement of wildfires in the whole Spotted Owl region. Stay with us. We always want people to listen to the iSpy radio show on the radio, but we also know that sometimes you might be trapped under a refrigerator and can't get to the radio. And we also have guests on who get pretty deep into their subject, and you might think, now hold on, I need to hear that one again. And that's why we have the podcast version of the show. The iSpy radio show is on all of the major podcast platforms, and if you're listening on one of those platforms, do us a big favor and give us a thumbs up or like and subscribe. That helps other people find us. Spread the word for good information with just a couple of little clicks, and thanks for doing that. We're talking today about some hope on the horizon for Oregon's forest and timber industry, some common sense in the near future given the changes at the top of the new Trump administration and people serving on that cabinet who seem to get it. And to discuss all that, we've been talking with Dr. Bob Zyback, a forest and timber consultant whose dissertation was on catastrophic wildfire patterns. And Bob, we were talking during the break there about that 10 a.m. rule, and you had a really good example of why that's necessary.
Well, what it is that the fires on national forest land were required by policy and by rule formalized in 1935 to put out any wildfires by 10 a.m. the following day. And that remained the rule until 1978, and it's been modified since, and we've been having increasing wildfires ever since. So the rule is you find a fire, you work through the night to put it out. And then if you don't get it out that day, it's 10 a.m. the following day. And so you stay on a fire until it's fully extinguished.
Well, that makes so much more sense, especially compared to now. Like you said during the break, they are working in shifts nowadays. And you had mentioned the example of a fire that went from 5 acres to 500 because their shift was over and they stopped fighting rather than keep fighting it and put it out. And that's just astonishing. There's a new report out that blames the Forest Service, not the power company. And in an email, you said the ODF report regarding the United States Forest Service's responsibility for the Santiam fire was amazing and long overdue. So talk to us about what happened there.
Well, in that instance, they blamed the fire, which killed four or five people and burnt 1,500 structures, destroyed most of the town of Detroit and so on. They were blaming it on power lines and filing lawsuits. And the lawsuits said that people could collect money from where the fire started. And then after 5 years, ODF determined the facts that the fire was windblown embers from a fire that had been allowed to burn for weeks because it was in a wilderness and fairly inaccessible. And they didn't have a 10 a.m. rule. And then that's what blew up. So they found out that it wasn't the power companies. All the lawsuits are now, it's going to be curious, the ones that have been settled for millions of dollars, what's going to happen to them.
Hmm. I know that that's going to have a huge impact because the Pacific Corps was found guilty of that fire. So yeah. I'm sure they're going to challenge that given that new report. You have a great article, and again, we'll make sure that we put this up on iSpyRadio.com, and I'd like to just read a little bit from here. This is from your conclusions and solutions, and if people read nothing else from that article, they need to read these conclusions. You say, whether intended or not, the U.S. Forest Service has been systematically destroying our public forests and rural communities with fire the past 35 years on physical, economical, biological, and aesthetic levels. For too many years, we've been fed the political propaganda, science, that a healthy forest is full of lots of big snags, big logs, and a multi-layered canopy of biodiversity connecting the earth to the highest old-growth canopies. Endangered plants and animals everywhere safe at last. In such an idealized environment, man is a pathogen, a transitory visitor who leaves no trace and only visits occasionally. This is one of the most misleading, deadly, and costly falsehoods imposed by central government on its rural population. And then you go on to say, this can be fixed. We just need to follow the law by returning to the Organic Act of 1897, the Forest Service Principles and Mission of 1905, the 1935 10 a.m. policy, and the Multiple Use Sustained Yield Act of 1960, and go from there. So we've talked about the 10 a.m. rule. These, in principle anyway, they seem like simple solutions. It's just that we've been doing all of the wrong things for far too long.
Yep. One thing about the article, it's still in draft until it's published. I'll let you know when that happens.
Okay.
But the it goes back to 1897. It said take out the dead and dying trees, the large trees to the local communities, benefit of local communities. They process there for the benefit of the U.S. public. And that has never been repealed. That's always been the foundation of all Forest Service planning. And it was the foundation of the 10 a.m. rule. The 1960 Multiple Use Sustained Yield Act was all the benefit of local communities and the U.S. population and reasonable management so that you never harvested more than was growing. You always had more growth than yield. So those are common sense. They are proven effective methods of managing a forest. They've never been repealed. It's just when we got NEPA and the Endangered Species Act and the Environmental Access to Justice Act and other opportunities for the big environmental groups to begin filing suit against the government that we got these fires, we got the unemployment, we got the dead wildlife, we got the smoky air.
So one other question there from that. You mentioned the Forest Service Principles and Mission of 1905. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, when Pinchot and Roosevelt created the Forest Service in 1905, it was signed into Congress, I think, in February. And Pinchot got a letter from the head of the Department of Agriculture at that time telling him that the management would always be for the greatest good for the long run. And that has been a unifying, defining factor in Forest Service management up until we started creating wilderness and streamside buffers and roadless areas. And it was very, very effective, and it was always very clear that this is for the benefit of the United States, that we're creating these jobs and for the local community.
Sure. Well, it's not just beneficial to the United States. I mean, it's beneficial to the environment if you do it that way. Having things burn up catastrophically, that does not help anything. And unfortunately, too many environmentalists want to get paid to care about the environment, just not care for the environment, because the latter takes hard work. Bob, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it.
And welcome back. We're talking now to Representative Ed Deal. He is the representative from Oregon's House District 17, which takes up most of Marion County, east of Salem, and the northern bits of Linn County. Ed, it is great to talk to you.
Great to be back with you, Mark.
Yeah, there is so much going on there at the Capitol building. It's almost mind-boggling and hard to keep it all straight. But before we get there, after our interview, we got talking to Dr. Bob Zybak and asked him if he had any questions for you. And he would really like to know your thoughts about the Oregon Department of Forestry's finding that PacifiCorps was not at fault, and why did it take 5 years? And he also thought it was highly coincidental because that ruling came out, it seems to be relating to some current legislation. So what can you tell us about this?
Well, yeah, we find the whole thing suspect too. I mean, they rushed out an email before the report was even published, I believe. And there's a couple bills that are in there that are related to this. There's an effort to try and cap what they would have to pay in the case of a wildfire, and also set up a fund. And also Rep. Kate, I co-chief sponsored a bill with Rep. Kate that would require utility companies to settle the ongoing lawsuits within a set time frame or be unable to increase their rates. Because they've settled some of these lawsuits, but they're dragging others out. I mean, I've got people in my district that they've died waiting for these suits to be settled.
Hmm.
So yeah, we find it suspect. I've talked to people up the canyon who say, I know for a fact that it was down power lines that caused the fire that burned down my house.
Hmm.
So yeah, I'm suspect of the timing.
Well, one of the pieces of legislation, I think, that he mentioned, I think what he was referring to was the catastrophic wildfire fund. And it kind of sounds like the state would be assuming some of the liability and shifting it away from insurance companies and away from the insured, you know, the power companies. Is that correct?
Yes, that's House Bill 3917, and I haven't done a deep dive into that, but I believe it would kind of set up an independent body that looks at these claims. There'd be a cap on the claims. There would be a process put in place, and it's really trying, you know, it's an effort to try and limit the liability on the utility companies. And you know, I can. There's arguments on both sides of that. Frankly, if every time there's a wildfire, we're going to sue, and the utility companies have to pay that. Ultimately, it comes from ratepayers.
Sure, absolutely.
Those bills.
Yeah, it's like raising taxes on businesses. Businesses don't pay taxes. Yeah. Customers pay taxes.
Yeah, and if we cap it, then I know that's going to make some people upset who've lost their homes or whatever due to wildfires that might have been caused by utility companies. You know, to me, the right answer is to actively manage our forests to minimize the risk in the first place.
Well, exactly. But I can kind of see the point that, well, if the state government is not willing to manage the forest from the insurer's standpoint, well, how can we insure our clients? Because you guys aren't willing to protect them from a potential forest. So I can see that, but the whole thing is just a boondoggle, and you're right. It absolutely comes down to, let's just manage the forest. We also wanted to have you on this week because you recently tried to hold an event up in King City, and it got canceled because people were calling in and basically saying you guys are a bunch of Nazis, and they convinced the venue to shut you guys down. What was that event about, and why did the venue choose to cancel exactly?
Yeah, that was an event put on by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. So it's kind of a conservative version of the AARP. And they had invited me to be the headline speaker for this event. And they also had somebody from, I believe it was Heritage, and Lincoln Cesarez from Turning Point.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else from that was talking about voter integrity. It was a great event that they planned, and it was part of their, I think they have a regularly scheduled AMAC meeting, but they wanted to make this one a little special and have some guest speakers. And so this had been planned for months in a retirement community in King City.
Hmm.
They have a clubhouse, and I believe that they've used the clubhouse before. The Republican Party has used the clubhouse. There's been other political kind of activities in the clubhouse. But a radical left-wing group got wind of this and decided that AMAC is some kind of Nazi white supremacist organization.
Wow.
And a bunch of them reached out to the clubhouse demanding that they, apparently, demanding that they don't allow this group to meet. And the clubhouse got cold feet and canceled.
Well, I get worried when I hear that venues are canceling that, because in my in my opinion, this is domestic terrorism. And if venues continue to give in, then this is only going to happen more and more often, because it encourages more of that kind of behavior of, by these anti-free speech groups. You know, that being the case, I wonder if it would be helpful if maybe put together some talking points for venue staff on how to handle these kinds of things. And number one, it would seem, is if they get a complaint, staff should immediately say, I need your name, address, and phone number, and I can call you right back on this one to verify your identity. And then if they ask why, they say, well, in case there's a lawsuit against us, should we cancel or should the police need to get involved? I think that would stop
That's
some of that
idea.
Right there. And then secondly,
it probably would.
Another one would be when the caller starts accusing groups of being Nazis, staff needs to ask, besides your own opinions and belief, what is some objective evidence of them being Nazis? Do they hate Jews? Are they trying to censor people? So there's a bunch more, I think, that you could come up with. But also, maybe another one needs to be, should we decide to cancel this event, we need a payment from you that will cover our costs and expenses, including potential legal costs.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I love all those ideas. And I just think that some of these venues just do not want to get caught in the middle of any confrontation. They don't want to be vandalized. They don't want a ruckus outside their facility. And so they're just backing off. And these groups know that their threats work.
Absolutely.
And their view really is they believe they stand for tolerance.
Yeah.
And we're intolerant. And the only way
I know
we have to be intolerant of intolerance.
Yes.
I'm not kidding you. That's what they say.
Yeah. Well, using Nazi techniques and tactics to accuse your political opponents of being Nazis makes you the Nazis, not your opponents. So, all right, let's go ahead and break there. Yeah. Coming up, we'll ask Representative Ed Diehl about what is happening at the legislature, what isn't going to be taxed, and some other fine bills. If you're in the Salem area, on Thursday, April 10th from 11:30 until 1, I'll be speaking at the Capital City Republican Women's Luncheon at the Scottish Rite Center on South Commercial. My presentation will be on faith and some interesting revelations to strengthen your faith from, of all places, science, which all too often seems opposed to a creator. But the closer they look, the more it seems certain there must be a creator. If you'd like lunch, it is $14, and they do need you to RSVP. Do that by sending an email to ccrwsalem@reagan.com. That's ccrwsalem@reagan.com. And men are welcome too. And welcome back. We're talking today to Representative Ed Diehl. He's from Oregon's House District 17. And Ed, there is so much going on there at the legislature. And we got talking before the show, as we could have almost had you on for the entire show just trying to get through some of these bills. And I don't think we would have even scratched the surface. And I said going out there that what isn't being taxed, and in some ways, I was being facetious there, but I think it almost might be shorter to say what isn't being taxed, because it looks like they are trying to raise taxes on flipping everything.
They're proposing a lot of taxes. There's a bill to tax bottles to pay for wildfire fighting. There's a bill to tax tires. There's going to be, I'm sure, a bill to increase gas taxes, probably a bill to do a mileage tax on vehicles. It's nonstop. And at the same time, they're setting themselves up to lose millions in federal funds.
Yes, billions, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It will be billions.
Well, you know, I saw a recent article that said that Oregon is one of only 9 states that have raised their taxes going back to 2000. Ours was fairly low. It was only by about 1% over those 25 years. Other states were much higher. But it's really been sending this message that Oregon is an unfriendly to business environment. I mean, that's our culture, is we're not friendly to business. Are the Democrats concerned at all that Oregon has that reputation, that it's unwelcoming and even hostile to businesses?
There are some Democrats that are very concerned about that. There are. But there's not enough of them. There's not enough of them.
Concerned about that, are they allowed to vote outside the Democrat circle? Because it seems like every time something like that goes forward, even though they say they're against it, they vote for it anyway.
That's the challenge. They there are cases, I do see them in some cases, where they will go against the rest of their colleagues and vote against a bill that's bad for business. But quite often, if it involves, especially if it involves public sector unions, they're not going to go against public sector unions, which is really sad.
Yeah,
and we have a number of terrible, terrible bills that are going to make the business climate even worse in Oregon.
Can you give us a few of the lowlights on that one?
Well, one big one is House Bill 2548. That would be the Agricultural Worker Labor Standards Board. This is an all-out attack on family farms. So they want to set up this independent body that would establish wages, hours, breaks, everything for agricultural workers across the state. And it is unbelievable to me. I mean, this is an attempt to unionize the agricultural workers. And like I testified and Representative Owens talked about in his remonstrance, if you create factory labor standards for ag workers, you're going to end up with factory farms.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're going to drive the family farmer out with these programs. And they're going to hurt workers too, because the way this bill is written, the incentive for the farmer is not to have full-time staff, which they really try to do. They try and keep a core group of people with them year-round.
Yep.
Everybody will become seasonal workers because at least that way they have some control over the how many people they have on staff. This bill would eliminate that control.
Wow.
And it's going to drive up costs. And it's like people don't understand how a farm works. You know, sometimes depending on the weather, you're going out in the middle of the night to start dealing with your crops. I don't know how you can establish our standards.
Well, it sounds like the kind of bill that somebody would come up with if they knew absolutely nothing about farming.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Cows only get out during the day.
Yeah. Right.
Wow. That's insane. Just to move on real quick, because like I said, we'll come back to some of these, but one of the bills that is really shocking to me is this notion that Democrats, who claim to be all about democracy, they've introduced a bill, I think it passed through the Senate, they're defying the will of the people. And this is the notion that Democrats are pushing ranked choice voting despite, or maybe perhaps more accurately, to spite the will of the people. It's the driver's license for illegals all over again. Ranked choice voting failed by 58%. And it's like, you know, since Democrats don't like the results they get when people vote, I guess they figure it's easier to pass a bill that only Democrats can run and only Democrats can win. So why are they passing this when they just had that ballot initiative fail by a large amount?
I have no idea. It blew me away when I saw that bill. The bill has, well, the one I saw was on the House side, and it has open primaries and then ranked choice voting after the primary. And you're right. We just went through a whole thing, and the ranked choice proponents spent millions of dollars in this state to get that passed, and our side spent 12 grand, and they lost, overwhelmingly lost.
Well,
why in the world would they be bringing this?
Yeah, I don't get it either, especially since there were some Democrat organizations that also, I think the Multnomah Democrats was one of them, that said, this is a failure, don't do this. And yet, here we are. What's the status of that? Did that pass out of the House or Senate?
No, I don't believe that it did. I don't think that bill is going anywhere.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. Okay,
let's
go ahead and take a break there. There's still lots more to talk about with Ed Deal about the nonsense happening there in Salem. Stay with us. And welcome back in our final segment now with Ed Deal. He's the representative from Oregon's House District 17. That's most of Marion County, east of Salem, and northern parts of Linn County as well. And so, Ed, we've been talking about some of the nonsense here that is happening in Salem. And you had mentioned one, SB 916. and it passed out of the Senate. It's now moved into the House, and this is where we're effectively paying union workers to strike. This is just astounding.
Yes, it is astounding. We would pay unemployment benefits to striking workers. And I don't even think that the workers asked for this. I've heard from some that just don't even think this is right. I think this is coming from certain union leadership. And I'm just blown away. I'm just blown away.
Yeah. Well,
it's the same group that tells us as legislators, no, we can't walk out. That is leaving the job.
That is an excellent point.
So now these guys want to walk off their job and get unemployment benefits for it. It's outrageous.
Yeah. Well, according to them, they're thinking you guys should lose your job if you walk out. So I think that's fair.
We lose our job.
Yeah. I think that's a fair amendment. Let's do that. So one of the other things that's about a week or so ago on March 24th, if I remember right, the Oregon House GOP sent a letter to AG Bondi, and you guys were giving OHA data to AG Bondi on Medicare funding of gender-affirming procedures. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, that was a group of legislators with the Oregon Freedom Coalition, and yes, we're pushing Bondi to really investigate this because what we've got in Oregon is we are doing these quote unquote gender affirming procedures on minors. And we're quite sure we're violating federal law because we have not done an evidence-based review of these procedures. And we have some documentation to that effect. And we also don't think that we've joined a lawsuit, and the Attorney General is not accurately representing what's been going on in Oregon on this front. So,
and to be clear, you mean Oregon's Attorney General?
Oregon's Attorney General.
Okay. Okay.
We have not been represent. Yeah, I say we. They have not been representing accurately what has been going on in Oregon. And so we're urging Bondi to investigate, and I'm pretty sure we're in violation of federal law, and we're using Medicaid funds improperly, in addition to harming kids.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So I hope some action is taken on that front. I appreciate the Lund report, which does healthcare reporting in Oregon. They just did a pretty in-depth article on this. And they'd also done an in-depth article about a month or so ago regarding the whole issue around the Health Evidence Review Commission ignoring the evidence-based review and just pushing these as a mandate.
Hmm. Well, ideology is always more important than kids. And there's a similar issue that was just announced, I think the day after you guys sent your letter, but it's on a parallel track. And this is the Office for Civil Rights is launching a Title IX investigation into Portland Public Schools. And the OSAA, that's Oregon School Activities Association, and they are looking into the fact that Oregon is continuing to allow transgenders to participate in girls' sports. And I'd like to get your take on this. The OSA's gender identity participation policy, quote, allows students to participate for the athletic or activity program of their asserted gender identity while providing a fair and safe environment for all students. And no, they are not. Because what they're allowing males into girls' sports and locker rooms and showers, that is not fair or safe environments for girls. They are instead choosing a tiny minority over girls.
Yeah, this is denying the safety and dignity of girls. And we, our group, Representative Bobby Levy, in fact, asked for a legal opinion from the state's legislative council, Capitol's legislative council, about, hey, is Oregon, the Department of Education and OSAA in violation of Title IX? And they came back and told us, yes, you are in violation of Title IX. So then a group of legislators and I wrote the Oregon Department of Education and OSAA a couple weeks ago, letting them know, you guys are in violation of Title IX, and we expect you to change this, and we'd like to hear back from you. And instead of replying to us or changing the rules, what we did here, just verbally, is they don't believe they're out of compliance. they believe they're on the right side on this one, unbelievably.
Yeah.
It's, so, yeah, somehow
so much for being the party
Title
of science.
IX.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. They've abandoned science on this.
Of course, the other side of that is that there are federal dollars attached to these. They're looking at pulling funds from public school systems. There was also a recent article here from KGW that said the Department of Education is revoking federal waivers to Oregon and California colleges and universities that it says are using funds to provide services to migrants in the country illegally. You know, it's just wherever you look, Oregon is bleeding federal funding. And from what I can tell, rather than following the law, they want to tax Oregonians more to make up for the funds that they're losing from the feds because they are not following the law.
They do. And they're actually in K-12. What I heard is the superintendents were getting together, figuring out how they're going to continue to operate without federal funds. Instead of changing a policy to comply with federal law, they're going to figure out how to operate without the federal funds. Mm. Oregon Health Authority is looking at something similar. And we're going to, like you said earlier, lose billions in federal funds and I guess put the Oregon taxpayer on the hook, figure out how to make it up. We're looking at some really rough times. Oregon, I'll switch to healthcare here. Oregon is the most exposed or in the top three as far as if we see Medicaid cuts nationally, Oregon is more exposed than just about every other state because we have taken advantage of all of these Medicaid expansion programs to the fullest extent. And so when the cuts come, we're going to see the hardest hit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be. Well, unfortunately, we are up against the clock. There's a lot more we could have talked about. Climate change tax and also Oregon officials are busily trying to get around that election integrity executive order that Trump just issued, but we'll have to have you back on for those. So, Ed Diel, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be back with you.
We have a lot of information for you in the show notes section of today's show page on iSpyRadio.com. Today's show is 15-13. You can find that by looking under This Week, the tab at the top of the page, in the recent posts on the right-hand side if you're on a PC. Or a super easy way to find any of our shows is to use the search bar near the top. In this case, enter 15-13. Tune in next week. We have a show building on our recent ones dealing with election integrity. There's some updates there. It is time to take action on fixing these voter rolls and creating secure elections. And that especially includes Oregon. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.